And welcome back. Historically Black colleges and universities, or HBCUs, are a major part of American history, especially when it comes to attempts to achieve equality in education. A few months ago, HBCU presidents met with President Trump about the future of their universities. The meeting brought attention to these schools, attention that was not necessarily there before. Today, what is the role of HBCUs, and are they still needed? Producer Alicia Lee has more.
Historically Black colleges and universities were established after the Civil War. They were initially for freed slaves. Then they became a place for Black Americans to get an education, when other schools would not accept them. They were a safe haven and a place of refuge. Currently, there are about 100 HBCUs in the country. There are two in Missouri, Lincoln University in Jefferson City and Harris-Stowe State University in St. Louis. Harris-Stowe traces its roots to 1857, when the public school system in St. Louis established a school as a place to train teachers. That school became Harris Teachers College for white students only. Stowe Teacher College traces its roots to 1890, when the St. Louis public schools created a training school for teachers for Black students. It was an extension of Sumner High School. In 1954, after the Brown v. Board of Education mandated a public school integration, the two schools merged. The merged school did not reference its African-American heritage and retained the Harris Teachers College name. The Stowe name came back into the folds in the late 1970s, and today the school is known as Harris-Stowe State University. I spoke with three current Harris-Stowe students about their thoughts on today's role and value of historically Black colleges and universities. Students Aaron Petit from Los Angeles and St. Louis's Erica Wise and Reed Chun sat down with me. I first asked Petit why he chose Harris-Stowe.
For me, I guess the choice would be I basically graduated from a community college in Los Angeles, California. Started off with a 1.8 GPA. I was very lost, but quickly got my act together. One of my history teachers inspired me to look into HBCUs. And from then, I went to a Black College Expo in Oakland, California, where I met Dr. Dwan Warmack. Before that, I got accepted to a lot of different schools, Howard University, Fisk, Morehouse, Johnson C. Smith. But I couldn't afford it, so I kind of needed to find a great medium. So Harris-Stowe was a great and excellent HBCU, and it was also affordable as well.
Well, my story's a little different. I graduated out of high school and kind of took a year off, but I always knew that college was something that I wanted to do. So after me getting myself together and applying to a bunch of different colleges, I kind of got prematurely accepted to Harris-Stowe, and that's a funny story, but it was like a blessing, definitely, and Harris-Stowe just definitely catered to me and was affordable again and just was all around a good school.
My story is a little bit mixed between theirs. I came from a PWI, a predominantly white institution, and my biggest complaint with them was that it wasn't a family. Nothing was together. I went to the financial aid office because under law, I'm considered an independent student. So financial aid was hard for me, and I felt like I didn't get the right kind of support. But when I came to Harris-Stowe, because I had to shop around for another school. I wasn't happy there. So when it came to Harris-Stowe, the admissions office, they were, okay, whatever you need, just let us know. We'll do our absolute best. And I feel like being an HBCU, it incorporates the Black culture and what I'm used to growing up, and it makes me more comfortable. And if you're comfortable, you're just going to do better in school.
Did you choose Harris-Stowe because it was an HBCU?
I would say yes. Like I said, a lot of my community college professors definitely influenced me on the importance of HBCUs, about the networking opportunities, about how close-knit and how much family-orientated HBCUs are. Even being here at Harris-Stowe, I never imagined an opportunity where I can talk to anybody in admission, from the president all the way down to even the provost or just professors. We're all just one big happy family here.
I would have to say yes. My high school was predominantly white, and even though I made my fit and I made my way through it, it was definitely very uncomfortable, and just like people not understanding your hair and just different kind of things, it just wasn't a fit for me. So I definitely did choose Harris-Stowe because it was an HBCU.
I did also. I feel like they're there is nothing like an HBCU to walk around and see people who look like you, think like you, act like you, but also still are independent and are their own character. I feel like, especially at a predominantly white institution, there's you just don't get that vibe. Like, you get small cliques of people, but every once in a while, you still want to branch out and be like, well, I know this group of friends is cool, but I want to see what everybody else is doing. But unfortunately, at another institution, you just, like, if you branch out, you're not going to get the same feeling, the same welcome feeling. But when you come to an HBCU, you can go to almost anybody, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, this is what I think of this. This is what I think of this. And you bounce ideas off each other. And that's what gets, like, intellectual density.
HBCUs, in the past, have been the forefront for the movement of equality. And with so much going on with various social issues and our political climate, the students were able to explain why they believe they are so important and why they serve a greater purpose.
I believe that they do, and I guess I'll open that up with a quote that I wrote. I said that if I can describe Harris Stowe as a person, it'll be a woman who never gave up on me. I believe that a lot of HBCUs offer second chances. A lot of HBCUs cater to students with special needs and come from different backgrounds and special circumstances. And I think that's what is one of the main differentiators between HBCUs and possibly PWIs, because I also went to a PWI as well for community college, and I never really got that there. So
I definitely think so. For the most part, I do think that HBCUs are still needed, because as long as they're still African Americans, I think they're always going to be needed. There's not going to be too many institutions where you can learn about your culture, your history, you know, just different type of things on what it means to be an African American in a world where, you know, we're kind of suppressed. So I definitely think we definitely do matter.
Yeah, I think we will always matter, especially as long as elementary, middle schools, high schools suppress the true history of the United States and where we came from. Because growing up, honestly, I didn't really think I didn't think like slaves. I didn't think it was that bad. I'm not going to lie. I didn't, because they suppressed it so much. I was like, all they did was take them in a boat, take them across water, and they had to work. The sun isn't that bad. I play outside all day. But they didn't get into the deeper facts, the how they used to mentally manipulate all the new slaves and all the men in front of the children and the women, and how they used to shackle them up, and how they used to just break them down to a level which is inhumane. And I believe once we understand that, then we can start understanding ourselves more and where we came from. Because, I mean, you can't progress forward. You can't have the most progression without understanding your past.
That was Harris Stowe State University student Aaron Batit, along with fellow students Erica Wise and Reed Chun, talking about the value of historically black colleges and universities. Dwan Warmack is the president of Harris Stowe State University. He is the 19th president, but also one of the youngest serving leaders of a four-year institution across the country. When I posed the question of the importance of HBCUs to President Dwan Warmack, he had a bit of a different take.
Yes. So let me start off by saying that. But the question I would ask, you know, it's interesting we even have this dialogue in today's time where the question, we don't ask the question, do you think we still need predominantly white institutions? Do you don't ask the question, do we still need Jesuit institutions? We don't ask the question, do we still need other minority serving institutions? We don't ask the questions, do we still need gender specific institutions? We don't ask, do we need religious institutions? And so I think what makes America America is that the diverse educational opportunities that you can receive in this society. And so, yes, there's a need for HBCUs and remains a need for those great institutions that's been educating the community for a very long time.
What does an HBCU mean to you?
Right. Well, HBCU, and I think all of us have, all of the institutions at HBCUs have different subcultures, right? But I think HBCUs as a whole have historically been an extremely welcoming environment that provides a family atmosphere and have been educating amazing global citizens for a long time. If you think about the work that happens at HBCUs, there are over 300,000 students attending HBCUs today. And so they're out of the 100 HBCUs only make up 3% of the colleges, universities in the country, but over 300,000 amazing scholars attend these institutions. And the most doctors, PhDs in the STEM and advanced degrees, over 70% come from HBCUs. So we only produce 3% of the college, university in the country, but produce 70% of the advanced degrees that come out of those institutions. And so amazing work is happening. They're educating amazing doctors, lawyers, engineers, all of those things that are happening at these HBCUs. And it's in a family environment that's nurturing and welcoming for all students that attend.
Over decades, HBCUs, even within the Black community, have had a bad reputation in the sense that people have thought they're not as diverse or they do not have as many resources as predominantly white institutions. Is there anything you can say to debunk these theories?
Well, I guess for me, it depends on who's telling the story, because nothing about me has been perceived at HBCUs being bad, right? You know, I think it's and continues to be one of the most diverse institutions in the country. So if you think about the amount of individuals that attend HBCUs, about 15% are non-African American. And so when you think about other institutions across the country that have that type of diversity, it's far and few between. So HBCUs continue to be diverse and always have been. They were founded as historically Black colleges, but has always been inclusive and providing access and opportunities for others who want to attend. And so what you can't debate is the quality that comes out of these institutions. When I just mentioned before, the amount of doctors, PhDs, individuals in the STEM that comes from HBCUs, the amount of federal judges that comes from HBCUs, the amount of lawyers that come from HBCUs. And so these institutions, you can't say they're bad, and they're producing all of the model citizens that happen in this country.
Over the last recent months, many HBCU presidents, including yourself, met with President Donald Trump. And there was a lot of controversy running around that meeting. Has there been any updates about this HBCU initiative or any results that has came out of it within the last couple of months?
Well, I think it's I look at this journey as a president of HBCU. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, and so I am responsible to ensure that my students have the most resources, the best opportunities to be successful at this institution. And part of that is meeting with a variety of different constituents, you know. And so the President of the United States happens to be one of those constituents who have responsibility of supervising the Department of Education that funds a large percentage of our budget. And so to have a meeting with an individual that has the ability to impact what happens with our institution is important. And I think, you know, for me, I don't see the controversy in the sense of who better to tell the story of HBCUs than HBCUs, right? And so I have this saying, if we're not at the table, then we're on the menu. And so we don't want people making decisions for us who may not know what's in the best interest. So I have a civic duty, social and moral responsibility to be an advocate for the students that I serve, that trust me at this institution. And so that I think that was a beginning conversation, you know, and as we continue to have conversations, I think it stems down because the decisions are made at the legislative level. So I have to continue to cultivate the relationship with my congressman, with my senator, to ensure that they're advocates for us in D.C. and even on a local level, our state reps and our senator, to ensure that the mission and the focus of Harris Stowe stays on the forefront. So when you say what happened with that, that just a part of many other parts, a part of our strategy to ensure Harris Stowe stays at the forefront and the students at this institution get what they deserve at this institution.
Within Missouri, there has been a lot of racist attacks on college campuses, from kids walking down the street and hearing racial slurs to waking up in the morning finding out there's a noose hanging on the main tree in the middle of the yard on their campuses. Now, do you believe that that could be a result of increased enrollment in HBCUs or even Harris Stowe?
Well, I don't know. I can't credit to that. I do know Harris Stowe has had the largest enrollment increase in the state of Missouri. You know, we're up about 24% new student enrollment. and about 13% overall. So when you think about the success that's happening, we want to create a culture and environment that's welcoming for all students that come here. And so recruiting a student to be here is one thing, but getting them to stay and graduate is another. And so that's our focus. Our focus is not what's happening at other institutions across the country or within the state. Our focus is on being the best Harris-Stowe State University that we can possibly be. And I tell students all the time, I meet with a group here that's for our Summer Bridge program, everyone is not meant to be a Harris-Stowe scholar. And so we are clear about what's our niche, who we want to be, and the type of student that can be successful here. And so we go after that student, we recruit that student, and we want that student to be here.
Many HBCUs have funding issues. It's sad, but it's true. And I know you guys were reasoning with the idea of cutting faculty or even raising tuition. Has there been any updates or anything with that continuing?
As I mentioned, we didn't cut any faculty. We've actually added faculty. We hire more tenure track faculty members. I fundamentally believe you don't cut your way out of deficit. You know, we have been on a very strong growth trajectory, and I want to continue on that. And so because of our intentional growth strategy and a focus on excellence and radical transformation, we have continued to grow and be successful in that piece. So we have had to look at a variety of different factors. And so we haven't raised tuition in about 9 years, which also puts us at a very interesting place. We have the most affordable tuition structure probably in the country. You know, so you can go to school not living on campus at Harris-Stowe, taking 30 credit hours for the year. You know, what you cost for 12 to 16 is the exact same amount. We have a block. And tuition, books, and fees for less than $6,000 a year. So that means, you know, $3,000 a semester. You can't beat that anywhere in the country. So this year, to ensure that we had that from equitable piece, we had a very minor tuition increase, like $5. So our tuition is still less than $204 a credit hour, where you look at everyone else, it's $400, $500 a credit hour. And so we are still the most affordable in the game. But not just that, we looked at a sort of a cost-sharing model. Not just tuition, because we don't want to put on the backs of our students. We looked at increasing our cost to health care for employees. We looked at a parking fee we implemented. We've looked at different fees for our auxiliary. So we looked at how do we balance this budget and still continue on the excellence agenda. And so we've been able to successfully do that. Our board approved that. And so we're excited about the measures that we have going forward and looking forward to radical transformation happening next year.
It is known that you are, if not the youngest president of a 4-year institution, which is amazing. How do you feel that your age or the fact that you are a little bit closer in age with your students, just within that, has helped you improve or even be a great president of Harris-Stowe State University?
Well, I am consider myself an OG now. I am this is my 4th year at Harris-Stowe, and I think it's, when I did arrive, I was the youngest college president, so I think there's been a couple younger than me, or one. I don't really get into this whole age piece. You know, I think I just try to lead from authentic space. You know, this work for me is not a job, it's a calling, you know. And so some were called to the pulpit, some were called to do other things. This is my ministry, you know. And so on Judgment Day, this is what I will be judged for. And so I like to connect, and I do it because of the students. And so I connect with them. I'm on social media. And so, yeah, so I don't know if it's the youth piece. I just think I have a little swag. Well, that tells me I'm aging myself, because swag is not, I'm on fleek, you know, and I'm lit. And so I'm understanding where the students are today, connecting with them and being able to have meaningful conversations with them. And sometimes it's not always about the tie, just having conversations about them in life and being able to connect.
Now, what are your hopes for Harris-Stowe State University and its students?
Well, our goal hasn't changed since my arrival. Our goal is for us to be one of the premier regional institutions in the country that just happens to be HBCU. We want to compete with everyone. I will put my top scholars up against any scholars in the country. Our students, the students that are coming to Harris-Stowe and who are believing in this mission and the vision that we're going, that's going forward, those students can be successful anywhere. And so there, this becomes a place of choice. They can go to any other school, but they're coming here. So our goal is for us to be one of the premier regional institutions in the country that happens to be HBCU, and I want to develop my students holistically. That's academically, personally, socially, and spiritually, whatever that means for them, and they go on to be prepared for a global society.
That's DeJuan Wormack, the president of Harrisville State University, talking about why HBCUs are still relevant and serve a purpose in the current state of his own university.
That's Alicia Lee, and we wish her well as she concludes her internship with us. Tomorrow, she'll continue her studies at Howard University. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.